Hello, you're listening to a podcast by Speak Up Radio, sharing some of the features and interviews we've done with inspiring people and organisations across London. Here, you'll get all the chat, insights and information, but you won't get any of the music, and that's because of how licensing works. To get the full experience, tune into the radio station 24/7 by visiting www.advocacyproject.org.uk/speakupradio. This work has been supported by Imperial Health Charity.
Hi, everybody. This is Jude, your host for today. Well, you're going to have two hosts. This is obviously Speak Up Radio from the Advocacy Project. I'm a peer, and my guest today is also a peer, which is Billy. And then we're going to reverse positions where she's going to ask me a few questions. So we're going to talk a bit about peer mentoring. It's a service that Billy's in. And then the second half would be an interview from Billy to me about my little story about being a functional depressant and what I did about it. But first of all, let me introduce you to Billy. So, hello, Billy.
Hi, Jude. Pleased to
How
be
you
there.
Doing? You okay? You nice and relaxed?
Very.
Good. So, as you heard from the intro, we're going to talk about peer mentoring. But first of all, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself, you know, your background story?
Right. I found myself, I've been sober about just over 10 years now. 10 years ago, I had what I think people call, used to call, I don't know what they call it now, a nervous breakdown. And I was self-medicating. And I always found drugs very useful in that they helped. Well, I thought they helped at that time. And I got heavily addicted. And as well as my mental health going down the drain, I became a heroin addict. I had two children. And when I found myself sort of in a heap on the floor, lying in my own vomit, I thought maybe I need to do something about this. So I was really fortunate. It's amazing how coincidence life happens. I bumped into a friend and we started chatting and they said, look, I'm at turning point. Why don't you give it a try? I didn't know anything about agencies that help with recovery. I went to turning point. I found this most amazing place. I spoke to wonderful people. I got a key worker and I was put on a prescription, buprenorphine, so our Subutex then. So the need to go out and score and all the drama that goes with that was immediately taken away and I could start looking towards my recovery, which I was desperate for then.
Brilliant. If I could just stop you there, you mentioned obviously you had a family and you had two children, but you've now started to get support from Turning Point. I mean, did you have your own family to help you, to have support yourself or other friends, or was it just purely Turning Point?
I came with my parents at a very young age, to London. So all my family, my parents died earlier on. So it is just me. My husband's family, my late husband's family is here, but they're all up in Cambridge area. So it's really always just been me and my children and a few close friends who were probably not really in a position to help themselves. So I've never had a huge family network as a support mechanism.
Wow. So it must have been quite heavy going. So Turning Point must have been a real good support. Is that fair to say?
It was an amazing support. I started on a day prep program there. And I met a woman, came to give a talk, and I thought, God, that's the life I want. I want what she's got. And I started going to AA. I mean, you know, by then I wasn't fussy where I went. anywhere that was help, would that I could get help. And that was really amazing. I had her as a sponsor friend. And from then I had Turning Point, I had AA, and things just start blossoming and opening up for you.
Right. So I think what we should explain to the viewers, A, that we're actually both in London.
Yes.
And Turning Point is an alcohol and drug a company that actually supports people. And of course, AA is the Alcohol Anonymous group. So you were basically doing both programs.
Yes. I mean, Turning Point was wonderful, but with AA in early recovery, there was a sponsor at the end of the phone who used to phone me in the morning, say, uh-oh, up, I think it's time to get up.
Okay.
And hit a meeting every day. I mean, in all NAA, AACA, all of them, you know, you start or when you feel it, you need the need, they do 90 and 90. You just go to meetings, 90 meetings. And, you know, when your life is virtually, you have nothing, at least having a place to go to 3-4 times a day, if you want, is invaluable. And
yeah.
I mean, that's in London. I don't know how it works outside of London, but I'm sure that you still have the sponsor system where you have someone there all the time for you, really.
Well, I think AA is actually around the world, isn't it?
Yes.
They kind of say anywhere around the world, possibly not in the deepest jungle, you're literally half an hour away from a meeting.
Yes.
And I think it's fair to say that Turning Point is a nationwide, possibly not totally everywhere, but there are other charities and other services that basically use your search engine, and there is support out there.
Yes.
What sort of length of time from, say, your darkest moment until the point you saw the light, so to speak,
yeah,
and you were on your feet?
Well, I mean, I knew if I wanted to keep my children and have a life, and I know you can't get sober for other people, your children included, I knew I had to just do something. And in this case, my children worked for me. They really were there as a real encouragement to get sober, but I also wanted to do it for myself. You know, it doesn't always work saying, oh, I need to get sober for my children. For me, it did work, thank goodness. But bottom line, I soon came to realize that actually I wanted to get sober.
That is actually quite a brilliant line you said. You can't get sober for other people. You know, you have to do it firstly for yourself before you can get on with other people.
Yeah.
Firstly. So are we talking a couple of years before? Because you obviously give back to the system now.
Yes.
And you become a peer mentor for Turning Point. So how long did that stage take to get to that stage?
I think it took me, I stayed sober for 5 years, and then I had what we call a slip, fell off the wagon, whatever you want to call it. And I think, funnily enough, once you taste sobriety, and those were one of the most, they were such really amazing 5 years. What I hadn't learned, I hadn't learned to cope really without drugs or alcohol. The first 5 years were very pink cloudy. Everything was working well. But when it came to the crunch, my first go-to was still, I went to my drug of choice. You learn as you get into, and getting, that only lasted a couple of weeks. I never totally went back to the madness, as they call it. And it takes years, I think I'm still working on it, to learn that actually picking up anything is not going to help whatever crisis I'm in. And that took a while to, you know, you can stop using and taking things, but it takes a lot longer to get mentally sober, to know that, you know, other things have to change.
Wow. Okay. I understand that, because I also did slip up, but like you, it wasn't for long. I can't describe it. It's almost like you have to do it in some ways.
Yes.
And then you start to formulate your support machine. You know, I kind of fine tune my support machine, and I know now the roads which I can go down or which I can't go down. And I did find volunteering a really a good thing to do. It actually gave me a bit of joy and happiness. So was that the same? Is that why you started to be a peer mentor?
Well, funnily enough, I'm sure I'm not unique, but I thought for a long time that Turning Point was such a big part of my recovery. And once I'd become a peer mentor, well, before I became a peer mentor, actually, I thought, how do I stay close to this organization that's so safe for me? Do I keep having to relapse, you know, and then they have to take me back so I can stay close? And then it suddenly dawned on me, you can become a peer mentor and you can stay with the organization forever if you want. So that was another learning curve. And yeah, that was invaluable. Now I don't have to relapse. I can give back, which I've learned is so important. And yes, and grow by being a peer mentor.
Right, yeah. And so let me ask you a question. Did you have a peer mentor going through all this? Or was it classed as a key worker?
No, it was a key worker. I never had a peer mentor, and only, funny enough, I only started hearing about peer mentoring when after my first slip, and I went to Turning Point and I said, I need to do like a refresher day course. I need to start from the beginning. And then towards the end of that, I was offered a peer mentoring place, and I thought, this is magic. Why haven't I heard of this? I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I think it's quite new in the sense for the last 6-7 years. Yes.
No, I think you're right. I think establishments are now realizing
the value.
People have gone through the system are valuable as peer mentors, because obviously people are going through the system. They're more likely to listen to them, I suppose, mm-hmm. and get a little bit more comfort that they've actually seen someone who's gone through the system and it's worked. So a peer mentoring is valuable. So what about, what sort of duties have you done? What sort of projects have you done? Can you tell us any stories there?
Oh, I can tell you lots, but...
I'm sure you can.
I mean, I did the peer mentor training. And then I got very involved with something that was called the Saturday Club. My passion's jewelry. We used to have, you would go to for the day. People could come and you'd have a meal. They'd do a little bit of jewelry making and we'd have bingo. And that's where I started. And then my second great passion was I had hepatitis, and I had the old treatment, which the interferon treatment, which nearly killed me. There was a year's treatment, and I found out about this fantastic new treatment, 8 weeks, 99% cure. So I did some Hep C training as well. So I do Hep C peer mentoring, and yeah.
That's brilliant. So there are various workshops you can get on to learn information and then utilize that information for people to serve as users, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I work at our hub in Soho, and I'm an expert at dry blood spot testing. I do love that, and which is very weird, but I do. So yes, I mean, peer mentoring, there are many things. I mean, you can get involved in, you know, escorting people from to rehabs. You can pick them up from jail. There's just new, I don't think there's a lot of things you can't do as a peer mentor, to be honest, within the organization.
So basically you find your own niche.
Yes.
What you're strong at.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I think there's, I mean, I did a spot at UCL hospital where we actually talked to young doctors and told them our story and the signs of what we've been through. So it actually gave them a better picture on how to handle people when they come through to their surgery. And I found that quite fascinating because although obviously doctors are very clever, intelligent people, they still needed to know that information from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it helped them a lot. So there is a lot of things. So what about, I mean, then do all the peer mentors meet up? Do you know about each other's projects? Do you help each other? Can you ask, can you continuously ask for help and support for yourself as well?
Well, at the moment we have we meet once a month online, and we all have a little chat about what's going on for us. We all feedback any new information or organizations we've heard of that are on the block. If we're looking for specific training, we speak to our peer mentor lead. So yes, we do keep in touch.
Brilliant. And do you think it's an important link for you? I mean, do you see yourself doing this for a long time? Because it actually, it helps you to give back and also stay happy.
Yes. I mean, I will be doing this for the foreseeable future. I mean, I'm of retirement age now, so I haven't got a budgeting career in front of me, but so yes, it'll be something I will do with a passion for as long as I can. Yes,
absolutely brilliant. Well, it's so lovely hearing your story and what you've become in the peer mentor. I know some of the stuff that you do, and it's wonderful what you do. So we've come to the end of our session. So again, we're talking from London. And we've mentioned Turning Point, AA and NA, but use your search engine for a nationwide service, because there is always one near your area. And I always say, speak up, it's never too late. But to end on a light note, you're a song of choice, Billy. Have you been thinking about a track that you would like to hear?
I've been thinking long and hard, and I always think lovely Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah.
Oh, that's a beauty. I'm sure a lot of people know about that. So here's Leonard Cohen and Hallelujah. And until the next time, which will be you, Billy, interviewing me about being how I've got through being a functional depressant. But until then, here's Leonard Cohen.
Hello, it's Billy speaking for Speak Up Radio, and I will be doing an interview today with Jude. Hello, Jude.
Hey, Billy, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. And we will be talking to Jude about his long-term recovery as a functioning depressive. Right, Jude, how did your journey begin?
Well, that definitely is a bit of a story. I can safely say in hindsight now, because I've got clarity, my depression started way back when I was a young child. We get the cards we're dealt with in life, but I won't go into those details. But the one thing I can say is, I always smiled, always said a joke, I always sort of worked hard. And I think my earliest addictions as a kid were sports, which kind of kept me on the straight and narrow in my mind. And then as I got older, I became a bit of a workaholic. And in fact, I did really well. I was part of owning five shops, even in my early 20s. So, from coming from a very poor background, I was suddenly almost quite, going to be quite rich. But always joked about and laughed and paid my bills. So that was my early life. And then life became a lot of reality and marrying, having kids and doing all sorts of things. And I didn't realize I wasn't able to cope with that.
Sorry to interrupt you, but did you wake up one morning? How was that?
Well, weirdly enough, it was when I had the first child. It was like a lightning bolt that hit me, and I suddenly realised, oh my God, I can't cope. But I didn't know how to communicate that to my wife, or family, my family. So, because I'd done everything right. I was working hard, had a couple of cars and business was good. And again, in hindsight, I realised, it was probably because of my own upbringing.
Yes. So, how did you go? What brought you? How did you get that you think, right, I really can't go on living like this?
Once you have a child and, I went almost straight into heroin, which is quite a biggie. And it also affected my partner at the time. And I first of all went to a rehab, which was quite, it was called Alpha House. It was in Southampton. It was actually quite, it was a year's program, quite extensive. And I did learn a lot about myself as you go through the program. I was the only volunteer there. A lot of people were there on a 2-in-1 probation. So it was either that or prison for them. But I met some absolutely amazing people from so many different backgrounds, and suddenly realised I had a bit of an illness. But then when I came out of there, I went into being an adolescent, which is a kind of, because I never really had a childhood. I was always working. I had three jobs in school at 13. So I didn't really learn social stuff. So that's the time I chose. But then, weirdly enough, as problems happened to me and family were dying and I had a second kid, I suddenly realised I couldn't cope again. So another addict, I actually became a sex addict at one point and then a cocaine addict. Because I couldn't cope, and although the rehab was good and it taught me a lot, it still didn't give me a complete support machine because I still thought I could sort things out by myself.
Right. So even after the year's rehab, you had what you would call them slips?
For definite slips. My depressions would really, it was kind of weird. It could be quite extreme. But then I'd kind of sort myself out and then start working again, but still not sorting myself out. Yeah. When I say sort myself out, get another job, get more money, always paid the bills, again, always laughed, always joked. So people thought it was okay. And I couldn't still communicate that I wasn't okay. So finally, I suppose, it came to a point at the age of 55 that I actually was binging hugely for about 20 years. So being okay for a few months and then massive binges, And I could sit on a, in my deepest depression. I only took to drugs and drink because I could sit on a settee for a day without doing anything. And then in the end, I took drugs and drink because I didn't want to sit on a settee for a day. But then you don't know what you're doing. You know, you start.
So you were self-medicating for quite a while to just keep yourself functioning.
Yes. And because, again, I have to underline this, I worked and paid the bills and smiled. And I could cover up, because I had my own company, I could say I'll be working out in London, so nobody knew that I wasn't working and I was binging. I was like a general in an army. I could really work out a plan that nobody contacted me. You know, all that energy you put into that, it would have been great if I put the energy into sorting myself out. But of course, when you're in it, you don't see it.
No, of course you don't see it. And when did you decide, like, right, okay, this has to be sorted long term? What do I do now?
I think it was the last binge, which is now 6 years ago. It was 2, 3, 4 days. I can't really remember. But I actually woke up on my back. And I think possibly before that binge, I thought I was going to do something and I won't wake up. But I did wake up. And luckily, I had my daughter pick me up. She gave me unconditional love. I went through the doctor, had some home nursing, and then I got referred to Turning Point, which is obviously the alcohol and drug dependency unit. Mm-hmm. To be fair, I went through a couple of key workers before I found the key worker, which was brilliant. And we actually sat down and had chats, and that really helped and supported me. And within a year, 2 years, I was getting my fitness back. Because I think at the first week, I couldn't even change the remote on my TV. I was that weak. But I did have wonderful, unconditional love from my daughter, which I was always very sad because I thought, well, as a parent, you should be doing that with your children. But Turning Point gave me workshops, they gave me projects, I started to volunteer, I got some jobs which I liked. Now I was on a low pay, but I was a lot happier, and oddly enough, I probably saved more money than when I was loaded with money. It was kind of a strange thing to say. And then I saw the peer mentoring thing to do. It was an 8-week course. It's a certified course. It's level 2. You go through a lot of things and how to handle your fellow service users and how to help in groups or in projects. So that's how I started to give back as a peer mentor.
Oh, fabulous. And you're still doing peer mentoring now?
Because I suppose I didn't, because I've always been a worker, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. So I stayed connected. They put me on some really great projects. I've got a dream of organising a real community CAF run by not just the community, but the service users. Mm-hmm. And as I'm a caterer, I would love to teach people to go through that system and maybe they can get a catering job. And then ultimately, a retreat outside London, a mini farm, in fact, because sometimes I think people just need some time out, mm-hmm. you know, and go. Well, what helped me a lot, I did a course of fruit and veg. My key worker did this to me and got me a course on fruit and veg, organic fruit and veg, a beekeeping course, which I loved. So going back to nature, going mm-hmm. back to basics. Was wonderful for me. I'm not great, I don't, although people say, you know, you'd be really good one-to-one, and I admire people who can do that. I might be able to do it once or twice, but do it every day would be really difficult. But being a peer mentor, you can do these projects, and then that's how you can help people. And we do meet up once a month and we talk about what projects we're on. And then through that, I've got an amazing project now where I'm a chef. I've got full-time work Monday to Friday after 5 years cooking basically for the homeless. But it's more a bigger project than that. They help them with clothing, toiletries, and for them to get advice and projects. Yeah.
It's interesting what you said as how your priorities change, that your work now, you might not have, you know, shops and cars and things, but at least you can live and be sane and you're doing something you have a passion for and working towards a wonderful goal to have this fabulous farm. And at least now you can live with, you know, this without this terrible fear of landing up on that sofa again.
Yeah, I mean, spot on, because in 6 years, I've not had that feeling, that depression feeling, which I had from a kid, because I put the support in place. And I know the signs now, whereas I confused the signs before by just saying I'll sort that out, and I never did. So I know the signs. In fact, what I've done now is, well, I'll tell you a little story where my daughter obviously picked me up and gave me unconditional love. But because of what I've done, she now tells me that I inspire her.
Oh.
And all of a sudden, it's fantastic. I've become a parent again. Which is the one thing I always wanted. To be a proper dad. And now she's got grandkids and I have a great time with the grandkids. And it's all right not having loads of money. You know, it really is. It's about who you love and care for at the end of the day.
That's so wonderful. I mean, to get not only your life back, but your family and your children. I mean, that is priceless, isn't it? It's a priceless gift.
And I thought I was going to die at 55. In fact, one of the workshops through the Innovation Fund that Turning Point do as well is a film company called Sobriety Films. And they actually taught me how to film on my mobile. And I did a little 6-minute story and it was called It's Never Too Late. And all these little workshops and stuff, it really helps you. I must admit, when I was doing the story, I didn't think much of it. But when I saw it back, it was very emotional.
Oh.
But it so helped solidify my good feeling.
Yeah. I think the important thing that you said in long-term sobriety, any sobriety really, is having, and you've mentioned it a few times, that support network.
Yes.
And learning when to say no, or when I'm not managing, when you need to ask for help and lean on them more. And that, I think, is a really important thing to learn in your life.
Yeah, I mean, obviously my depression's, my problem is always, I would always get addicted to something to cover up my depressions, whether it would be sport, workaholic or a drug or drink. Even, you know, as I said, I was a sex addict at one stage, but just to cover up my feelings. And it so shocks me that now I don't have those feelings. You know, you're wary of them. But there is triggers, and it's up to you whether you take that trigger.
Yes.
You know, what road you take. And I haven't taken that road. And part of me giving back to the system, I think, helps me a lot as well. And of course, I'm a happy boy. I've got a bit older and I've got a lot of ailments. and probably in the past, I would be binging them, you know, to get rid of it. But I don't now. I am happy. And I didn't think that 6 years ago. I never thought I'd get to this stage. And if I get the dream of my community care for that retreat, oh, my God.
Wow. There's no stopping you now, Jude. I mean,
well,
the world next I will conquer.
The other thing I'd like to mention is that I've learned not to confuse depression with normal emotions.
Yes.
Because you can be down in life, but that doesn't mean you're depressed. So I put down everything as depressions at one point when I was heavily into drugs. You've got to go through, you've got to jump hurdles. Yes. And sometimes you get frustrated and you get down. But you can never be up and happy unless you go through those things.
Yes.
And when you've got, I always try to do things on my own. And now I've got support and I've got that machine and I do jump hurdles now. So, but you will get down now and again, but that's a normal emotion.
Yeah, that is a normal emotion. And it's often when you in this madness, we confuse challenges and things like that. You know, oh, I'm not well, I can't cope, I have to take something, give me something. And no, that's just life, unfortunately. But Jude, it's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Do you have a favorite little ditty or a song you would like us to play?
Yeah, well, you know, hundreds, because music was actually part of my life and lyrics. And I used to be a photographer in concerts. So I've seen tons and tons of stuff. But you know what? I heard this on the radio the other day and I thought, ooh, how very apt. And that's the David Bowie song of Changes.
Ah.
It's as simple as that, Changes. Yeah. And like Speak Up Radio says, it's never too late.
Absolutely. Jude, it's been an absolute pleasure. And now we will fade away playing Changes by David Bowie.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you very much for that, Jude. And just let me please remind everyone, use your search engines. We try not to be too London-centric. Use your search engines. Speak to your doctor. There is help and sometimes a lot of it out there. So, you know, please don't be afraid to ask for help. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. If you'd like to leave us any feedback, you can email us at speakup@advocacyproject.org.uk or you can go to our website www.advocacyproject.org.uk/speakupradio. That's all one word. Thanks so much for listening and do let us know what you thought.